This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And it's Geek Squawks. My name is Jess Andu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. And Matt, I think we have a task to do because we need to manage space traffic better. I don't know if you saw the news, but recent near miss between SpaceX and ESA's satellite highlighted the weaknesses of our current system for keeping the orbit safe. There were plenty of actually unusual things that happened between the kerfuffle between the European Space Agency and SpaceX. One is the public statement released by the European Space Agency, or ESA. Initial reports by SpaceX declined to move its Starlink satellite despite being warned of a risk of collision. And then SpaceX claimed it didn't respond because a glitch caused it to miss the warning, to name a few. But perhaps the least surprising aspect was that these two objects in orbit could have actually crashed into one another. Well, and that's, I guess, you know, it's quite risky because it's only going to exponentially grow. A number, you know, this from the Technology Review, they were saying that 24 companies alone have proposed to launch over 20,000 satellites in the next 10 years. For context, fewer than 8,000 payloads have been placed on the Earth orbit since the space age began.
Yeah, and you know, when we also have space agencies, like I think it was the Indian Space Agency earlier this year that blew up a satellite in space, creating more debris, we kind of ignore the fact that the area that satellites are placed around our orbit is actually relatively narrow. You know, we think of it as being, oh, well, they're just in space, but they're not. They're in a relatively narrow band. Yeah. And obviously, some of them have to be in fixed orbits. Others can move around or they can change their orbits. You know, spy satellites and weather satellites and all that kind of thing can move around and home in on us and all that kind of stuff. So there is a lot more movement out there than we think. And just in the same way that we're always amazed that aeroplanes can crash into each other, if you put so many satellites up and there are no regulations and there are no systems to prevent these collisions, they are going to happen. And they're going to happen with increasing frequency, as you said, because so many companies are putting these devices up. I think we discussed on a previous show, the cost for putting a satellite into space now has come down to around $5 million. Yeah. And if you go with one of the commercial space agencies, you know, they will actually put up four or five satellites from different companies on the same trip. So you can see the kind of volume that's actually going into this business and this area at the moment.
And it's funny that actually no one kind of oversees this. There isn't like a, you know, a satellite space traffic operator per se, because right now, most satellite operators, including some abroad, they simply just rely on the US Air Force forecast of potential conjunctions between active objects in orbit. So the Air Force, which initially was just aimed to track missiles in space, not to become the world's space traffic cop, they track objects using radar and delivers alerts when the probability of a collision is higher than 1 in 10,000. And on Monday's kerfuffle, it actually rose to 1 in 1,000. So it was pretty close. So what they're doing is like each satellite operator is basically doing their own assessment to the risk and determine what to do about it. Some of those operators will perform a collision avoidance maneuver. Some of them will just go like, it's all right. It's 1 in 1,000.
Well, one of the other things we have to look at as well is a lot of the companies putting these satellites up are startups.
Yeah.
They're technology startups. And there's been a trend over the last few years to put the satellite up first and to try and monetize the data it brings back later, especially with a lot of the kind of mapping company sites that are that have been going up.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're selling the data to research agencies because they can analyze things like movement in parking lots, all kinds of weird things that you wouldn't necessarily think could be monetized. So what we're going to see is natural attrition as well. Companies that are founded with startup capital but don't have a working business model, they will go to the wall, but they will leave satellites up in space. So there may not even be people to avoid these collision response maneuvers in the future because the company that owns the satellite has gone out of business.
And actually, interestingly though, there are reasons why this has sort of like become the norm. For one thing, changing the trajectory of an object speeding around the planet at tens of thousands of miles per hour isn't actually easy, especially when they're only relying on like a really small, tiny thruster for maneuvering. And oftentimes, the concerning level of risk will drop in one or two orders of magnitude as more data arrives. So vast majority of cases, the maneuvers aren't really necessary, but they're actually not really easy as well. So, you know, a lot of them are saying that we, you know, it's just something that just happened. Like you mentioned, they're all startup companies, but we actually can't just continue in this way. There needs to be, I guess, like a satellite police or a satellite cop, because there are, like you mentioned, these startups are building up and they're all going to space building their own satellites, sending up their own satellites, like the Starlink, which is a mega constellations that will compromise thousands of satellites from different organizations that will be sent up as one payload, and they'll all be fully operational, and they'll just complicate our space traffic.
Absolutely, and there's also the added complication that if you were looking for some kind of satellite police, we are seeing this kind of increasing militarization of satellites. So you're not going to see cooperation, for example, between the US and Russia and China when it comes to these kind of military satellites. And as you mentioned earlier, it can be very hard for commercial satellites to change their orbit and get out of the way in instances of these collisions. But it's even harder for them to go back to their orbit afterwards to resume what they were doing in terms of commercial operations. So it is a very, literally a very tricky area to navigate.
Yeah, something needs to be done and someone needs to do something about it.
What we need are actually crossing guards up in space. We need like those lollipop people.
That's a good start. You know, I mean, we started with that and then we had traffic lights. So maybe we should do that in space.
Exactly.
First, right?
You know, we're going to have a lot of people that technology puts out of work. So why don't we send some of them to low Earth orbit? Yeah. Look after the satellites.
Before they go to Mars, right?
It's exactly. Like, staging like post.
All right. We'll, when we come back, we do have King of Culture and we'll talk about Apple, of course, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It is now time for King of Culture. Matt, what do we have?
We have another book today. This is a book that I'm in the middle of at the moment. It's called Rebooting AI, and it's by two writers, Gary Marcus and Ernest Davis. Now, I've read Gary Marcus before. He has a background as an academic. Now he's an AI CEO. He wrote a book before about essentially taking a year off and teaching himself to play guitar. It was it was his midlife crisis, and he wrote a book about it that's quite interesting. But this is nice because it takes a very kind of easy to understand route into AI. It looks at the way AI functions. It looks at the kind of misconceptions and premises that we have about AI. It looks into some of the reasons, for example, why AI can't read a sentence and understand what the sentence means. And it kind of dispels some of these myths that we have about smart computers and how the development of these computers is going to change. So if you are interested in AI, if you don't really have that background as a data scientist, which a lot of the books on AI kind of assume you have, this is a very kind of user-friendly, not whimsical, but quite humorous approach to what the world of tomorrow might look like with these machines in. So, as I said, this is Rebooting AI by Gary Marcus and Ernest Davis.
And he can play the guitar now.
And he can play the guitar now, yes. Yeah.
All right, all right. Okay, and it's very MSP style, I guess, then, what you're trying to describe it, yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, they've had the patience to sit down, and obviously they have a lot more knowledge than me because they are like proper people. So, if you want to go beyond the kind of stuff that MSP does, we take a very kind of surface approach. But yeah, it has that same easy to consume style.
All right. Talking about easy to consume, something that's not going down really well with a lot of people, especially in the Twitterverse, is Apple's new word. They just invented a new word when they launched the new iPhone 11, and it's called Slofies. Slow motion selfies. That's what it's kind of describing for. But Slofies.
You know,
I don't know.
The only thing I can imagine that's more boring than looking at someone's selfies is looking at them in slow motion.
Slofies, you mean?
Okay. You know, we often talk about technology, you know, solutions in search of a problem.
Yeah.
And I think this is definitely one of those things. Yeah. It's something that, you know, you might use for yourself once or twice. Or you might take a picture of your cat, my cat, in slow motion once.
Yeah,
but after maybe, that, you know, I really don't see the point. Plus, you've been able to take slow motion pics on cameras for a long time.
Of course, this is just, you know, one of those, you know, cool features that your phone can do, which you maybe won't even do at all. But we have to talk a little bit about just, you know, because Apple has launched like their new versions. And if we don't, then people will say, oh, you know, Jeff, you're totally biased, you know, because you don't like Apple. And Matt, you should have done a better job because you are using Apple's iPhone and, you know, laptop and iPad and all these stuff.
But I will be honest. I woke up on Wednesday morning and saw all the information about the launch. This year, I didn't even know the date of the product launch.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, it has been so quiet. To be honest, I've been focused on the launch of iOS 12, 13 rather, which is coming next week, and especially the iPad OS, because those are things that I think are going to have much more consequence for most of the users. Because when you look at the iPhone 11 and the Pro editions, really all you can say about it is camera, camera, camera. I mean, the focus of the keynote, camera, camera, camera. If you go to the Apple's website and look at the phone, camera, camera,
it's
camera.
It's just giving me tripophobia all over.
Well, like, yeah, I
know.
I
can't look at it. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, I really don't understand what the appeal is. Because as we were saying off air, are you really not happy with the performance that your current smartphone camera is giving you? Yeah. They're already approaching the level that DSLRs were at a few years ago. You know, we can do amazing things with the cameras and the video performance that we have on the phones already. I mean, fantastic. These new iPhones have got a chip that hopefully means they won't overheat and stop recording 4K video after about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But by the same token, how many of us actually need to record 4K video on our phone? Mm. As you were saying before, when you post your things up onto Instagram, that 4K automatically gets compressed down to, I don't know, about 3.
Yeah.
Not 3K, just 3 bits.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't really know what we're achieving by constantly going bigger, bigger, bigger. That's why I think the changes to the OS are actually going to be a lot more consequential when we see that release next week.
Yeah, it's definitely a software world. You know, talking about Slofies, it's, you know, something that you could do, but maybe you shouldn't. Speaking of which, there's a thinker called Eddie Zhang who's actually figured out a way to install Spotify on his vacuum cleaner.
I love this story. I mean,
but think about it, Matt.
Oh, no.
Vacuum cleaner.
I've thought about it completely. It is completely pointless.
Yeah.
This guy has done it simply because he wants to see if he can do it. Because if you put Spotify on your vacuum cleaner, you can only use it really when you're not vacuuming because the noise is going to drown it out.
Exactly.
I mean, I've tried vacuuming using my Apple earpods and that doesn't work either. I give that up after a second because I just end up with 4 sets of shrill noises coming into my head.
It is
fantastic. Completely and utterly and totally without point, but it does go to show you how capable our devices are becoming. And I think we were saying on an MSP a couple of weeks ago, you know, when you see the word smart in front of any device, it usually means that it's a device that was doing pretty well as it was and isn't actually asking for any smartness to be added.
Yeah, I know. It makes no sense, but kudos to him for doing it. And now it's time for your TM1 Tech Minute. With the value of e-commerce sector across the Asia-Pacific region estimated to be worth around $1.2 billion in 2019, it's a small wonder that companies are scrambling to secure a share in this rapidly growing market. However, the data, cloud, and SaaS logistics advantages enjoyed by global e-commerce leaders can leave many SMEs wondering if they can afford to compete. TM1's hyper-connected ecosystem provides comprehensive digital solutions that level the field, offering you cutting-edge e-commerce solutions at a fraction of a cost. TM1's cloud, data, and business process automation services can enhance the efficiency. TM1 provides the speed and agility needed by businesses to scale sustainably and compete 24/7. All made possible by TM1. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute. Matt, what do we have for GeekTunes?
Well, we have something that affects every single one of us. Mm. This is Trouble Every Day, a cover of the Frank Zappa song by She Drew the Gun.
BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.